What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted saxophonist and music producer. He has written, produced, remixed records for such artists as Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind & Fire, Gerald Levert, Vesta, and En Vogue. In addition to that, he also produces music for film and television commercials. Please put your hands together and welcome smooth jazz saxophonist and music producer, composer, Martin Blockson. What's happening, Martin?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, pleasure's all mine, man. Thank you for taking your time and coming on my show and chop it up with me, man. From one musician to another, man, I got to take my hat off to you. The tracks that I've, you know, had an opportunity to listen to, Martin, are just off the meters, and there's such diversity musically in the tracks, man. Good job.
Thank you.
You know, so give me some background, Martin, of how and when you started this musical journey, man, and, you know, evolved into a seasoned professional that you are now, man.
Well, I started at a really young age, like a lot of people grew up in church, come from a military background. Actually, I was born in the Philippines and been part of a military household. My dad always thought that the kids should be, you know, have a discipline. And when he was able to kind of see where things that we were interested in, my sister and I, he was all about it. He always listened to, always had jazz records playing, and my sister always listened to classical, you know, and like I said, growing up in church, so we were exposed to a lot of different types of music, different cultures, and, you know, just traveling in different countries. So music was a big part of our upbringing. So from there, taking lessons in school, and, I actually started playing clarinet, like a lot of saxophonists do. And, you know, when you get at an early age, and then eventually switching over to saxophone because I wanted to play a guy's instrument, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff from playing the clarinet. But, from there, and just playing through school, you know, the church being a big part of our upbringing, as well as, you know, Dad always exposing us to things, taking us to concerts, shows, and all that. You know, we were always in the middle of it. Dad kept busy with that, so.
That's hot, man. You know, you and I share some similarities. I come from a church background also. I started as a guitar player in a church and eventually moved into my craft as a keyboardist. I've always been a keyboard player, but, you know, I play guitar on the side too. And, you know, I always tell people, man, church is my first audience, you know, of what I feel you get a chance to learn what works, what chops work for an audience and what doesn't, you know, so I got a chance to really, focus on a lot of my chops, man, as a musician and developing my ear and developing that relationship between my bandmates, man. What a great experience.
I was just saying, I agree with you just as far as the whole church, growing up in church and trying different things, improvisation, and learning the passion, you know, to learning how to pull the passion out of your playing. You know, of course, it's all directed toward God and you're putting everything you have into it emotionally. You know, it's not just playing the instruments. If you grew up just taking lessons as opposed to, you know, being in church, it's almost like you're forced into a performance mode every Sunday or Wednesday night service or whatever, every opportunity you get to pull yourself into the music and, you know, and give back to God. So it's a pretty awesome way to grow up.
It is. You know, aside from being involved in church, Martin, man, who are your major music influences, you know, that kind of really paved that way for you and said, man, this is where I want to be as a, you know, I'm going to retire from music, man. This is going to be my only occupation, man. Who was that musician that really inspired you to keep doing what you're doing?
I would say from an arrangement standpoint, definitely Quincy, just being a producer and learning how to work with people. And one thing not just the arranging and, compositional aspects of it, but also just how he interacts with each musician. He's able to pull the best out of it. And that's one thing that I always admired about Quincy as far as production influence. The contemporary Teddy, of course, from using the samplers and modern technology, of course, of Herbie, And as far as playing, you know, my staple favorite tenor heroes, John Coltrane, Wayne Shorter, Sonny Rollins, and just to name a few.
You know, one thing, we talk about Quincy, man, it's, you know, all the productions that he's done over the years, you know, I just felt that everything that he gave all of his artists really had their own identity out of the production. You know, being a producer myself, man, you know, Quincy Jones is a huge influence on me as a producer, as well as Teddy Riley. Teddy Riley is like my main mentor as a producer, man, really where I wanted to focus. And you know, as a player, you know, it was the George Duke, Herbie Hancock's, Jeff Lorber, Chick Corea. I mean, these guys were kind of like, you know, my go-to for pulling up chops and things, man. And you know, it's just kind of cool, man, we get a chance as musicians, you know, once our skill develops, get a chance to play covers and play a lot of our favorite heroes' music, man. That's just really inspiring in itself. So yeah, I can't talk enough about that.
Yeah, I could go on. You know, there's so many different producers. Even as far as one person I admired, David Foster on the pop side, and Maurice Mardin, you know, those guys knew how to pull things out of singers, especially female vocalists. They're just incredible at doing that. You know, they've mastered the psychological things that go along with singers. You know, and they're able to, you know, no matter what level, they always manage to make them sound great and pull out the passion out, you know, and attitude out of them. Just from a vocalist, vocal standpoint, those are two of my favorite producers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, I agree with you. But, you know, I got to ask you, Martin, man, you know, as a music producer, man, what are some of your methods that you like, you know, adding to your own compositions, whether it's for yourself or for an artist? I mean, do you work with a team of other writers and composers, or is this kind of like a one-man show that you run on your own?
For the most part, I like to collaborate, but pretty much a one-man show, just because, you know, sometimes you're just under time restraints, and when you're feeling it, you know, you just want to sit down and just do, as opposed to, before you bring in other folks, you know, I might play all the keyboards myself, and then, you know, if I feel like, you know, someone else can bring something in, you know, I'll call somebody in. Very, very rarely, but, you know, if I could get more of an opportunity to do that, I would. You know, I have done some things live, as well as, you know, so I've kind of been on the both sides, you know, without the technology and the sequencers and with it. You know, there's just a different kind of energy, so it just really depends on type of music I'm doing and what's available to me.
You right.
Know, sometimes, as modern day producers, if we have our own deadline, some of them, especially in independent music, we set our own deadlines. But sometimes we have to, you know, kind of self-inflict our own deadlines. So, you know, when we're, you know, we get into doing that, being in the moment, you know, that's when, you know, technology has been a huge, great tool for
right,
us too.
Right.
You know, I just try to pull, you know, anyway, I don't put any rules on anything. You know, I don't have any particular method. You know, I love playing live. You can do it. You can get a bunch of guys together in the studio to do it if you have the budget or whatever. You know, it just depends on what the restraints are, you know, whatever the parameters are in you know, that situation.
Sure. You know, I like talking to seasoned vets out there, Martin, you know, about the analog and now merging into the DAW experience, man. Give me your pros and cons of both platforms and, you know, what you're currently using today on your projects.
Wow. I started, you know, I'm a tape baby, you know, the 2-inch, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Love to have the 2 Studers and, you know, the wish list of cutting on a Neve and mixing on an SSL. So I started then, and as an engineer or a novice engineer, I should say, I was able to, and as a producer, I was able to work with some great engineers, especially a lot of stuff that I was working on Atlantic and stuff. And when you work on label stuff, you get your wish list because the budget's there, you know,
right.
Especially back then, budgets were bigger, and you know, but you know, learning outboard gear and watching some of these. These cheap killer engineers always looking over their shoulder. Even when I was a producer, I would always watch what they do. You know, some of the tricks, trades, working with outboard gear, and, you know, watching these guys back then figure out delay times and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's, those were a great time to learn. And I was able to, you know, as music has changed and technology has changed, I was able to take those tricks and, you know, knowledge of outboard gear and signal processing, kind of make that transition a little smoother. It's like, oh, okay, it's the same thing. Now you, instead of going to an SSL and paying a few thousand dollars a day, you go home and you've got your SSL plugins, and it's pretty incredible what you can do at home for everything that they have in outboard gear. They've got a plugin.
Yeah, it's definitely changed over the years, man. You know, coming from an analog background myself, I definitely have less outboard gear that I do currently. You still got your access to microphone pre's and things. And, you know, with the access to great converters and, you know, like you say, plug-in these days, man, what's the typical signal chain that you're running in the studio now on your inputs?
Focusrite. I use Focusrite pre's, and I'm a sonar head.
Okay. A good old catwalk sonar.
I do like Logic, and I like the sound of Logic. Great. One thing I do like about the main reason I use the sonar is just because it operates under VSTs and there's more developers. So there's just more toys to get instead of, if you're, Artez, it's proprietary, and everything's going to work.
Sure.
But you have less to pull from it. I like to switch it up, change it up all the time, because every plugin's not going to work all the time on everything. You're not going to get the same results. So, and creatively, I'd like to be able to pull from different sources and see what, see what the next guy's thinking when they're developing new plugins, whether DSGIs or VSTs. The audio plugin.
Sure. Now, finding that zone for creativity, Martin, I mean, with your years of experience as a producer and a writer, do you find that being in a studio where the environment is more controlled and you can focus on your composition, or is it on stage and feeding the energy off the audience and band members around you?
I've never really had a problem doing it either way. I love collaborating, and, like I said, when you can do that, that's great. But me being an old school writer, I've always found that the foundation is just the piano, sometimes just the voice, and finding those intimate moments, whether it's, if a sound inspires you to go one way, or, certain voicings against you, you sitting at a piano. And that's, the foundation for a good song, composition, whatever. And anything else you build, you have a great song, you can do it. Anyway, you can do it in any style, genre, whatever. And it all starts, creativity starts with, whatever's all in my head and all in my heart at the time, and how it translates after I've, come up with it at the piano.
I definitely could see that, man. I listen to tracks like Runaway and The Side of Blues, and, When She Smiles and Let the Children Play, man. Those four tracks alone are two different, and so many different styles. None of them sound alike. I mean, you're coming from like The Side of Blues. It's heavy blues background, but again, I love the harmonies and placements of horns you did on the chorus, that one in particularly. And then you get a track to like When She Smiles, man, right then it gets into a good stepper's groove, so I do see a huge diversity in your music, man.
Yeah, thanks. A lot of that, I think, is just from getting the opportunity to work in different genres, and just being able to just enjoy the freedom of just trying stuff. And one thing I do like about being independent artist is you're not confined as much.
Right.
You don't have an A&R person breathing over you, so you can do pretty much anything you want to do and try it and see, and let the people decide. Different tracks hit different people in a different way. I love hearing the stories and the feedback you get from different folks. One person may like this track, and another person like another one, and that's all good.
No, I totally hear you, man. I think personally, I've been waiting. Well, I'm sure you have too, man. I mean, a lot of guys have been out there, man, in the early 80s. You know, we've been waiting for a day like this, man, where the creativity is under our control. We don't have to really answer to anybody to really release our own projects. And, you know, having the online distribution and developing your fan base, man, this is a musician's dream, you know, on the positive side. So, yeah, let's take advantage.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to, you know, we can't do 15-minute long intros like some of those Stevie Wonder records. You know?
Right.
First comes in, you know, you're on side.
Yeah, it's still got to be radio friendly. You know, Martin, in addition to creating your own records, you've also worked with some heavy industry veterans such as Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind & Fire. Man, how did that collaboration come about? I'm a huge fan of Earth, Wind & Fire, man, but, you know, just to have that one collaboration with Philip Bailey, man, that's had to have been an experience in itself.
Actually, I met him through a contest, actually, a songwriter's contest. Ooh, you tell my age, late 80s. Anyway, and... So after the contest, we continued to, you know, kind of hit it off. And he flew me out to L.A., you know, did some writing over at his home. And he came to Boston. I was living in Boston at the time. So you know, living there from going to Berkeley. So I still had my apartment there and my studio set up there. So he's one of the rare breed of writers that just, you know, really believes in the song. Anything that, you know, any way that you choose to produce it, that's just another area. But I learned a lot about writing from, you know, and really not using filler lines, filler lyrics. And, you know, sometimes we can get lazy as writers, especially with technology today. We can get lazy when, okay, it's almost done, but let's try to get this over with. We'll just stick anything in there,
you know? Right.
And so he, as a young writer, I was able to take that from. So it was definitely a unique experience for me to work with some writer and artist in that caliber.
You know, I can imagine, man. You know, thinking of Philip Bailey, man, outside of Earth, Wind & Fire, he's had a successful music career and, you know, had the opportunity to collaborate with other industry veterans like Phil Collins. You know, I could still date back to the 80s, man. She's an Easy Lover, you know what I mean? And, you know, going back to the songwriting structure and, you know, also from a composition standpoint, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we can get lazy with technology and just add certain fillers in there, and you know, to me, the phrasing's got to be perfect. I mean, it's got to be like it was invented for that moment and that arrangement at that particular time. And you know, having more seasoned and developed phrasings in your composition really helps you out, and really shows that, you know, you've matured as an artist, and your ears really mature too. Yeah, so I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I took from. I mean, even paying attention to vowel sounds on words at the end of phrases, and, you know, maybe things don't sing well. So, you know, sometimes vowels just don't work well. They don't sing well. But, I mean, a lot of his compositions, you know, you'll find it, those, especially working with his falsetto voice, certain vowel sounds are stronger with different singers. And sometimes it's tricky to find, to still be able to write perfect lyrics that make a lot of sense. Find, you know, to use less words and use perfect rhythms and say much more than you've actually written.
Definitely. And,
there's an art to that.
Oh yeah, man. You know, I think this, you know, I talked to a lot of musicians, man, and you know, I remember talking to George Duke one time and interviewing him, and you know, he told me that his major obstacle that he really worked on and focused on was the art of sustain and release, and you know, attack, and you know, how long you're going to hold that note for, when you're going to release that chord or note. And you know, it works as vocalists and different words, is, you know, if there's too many words or it just doesn't fit in that rhythm, man, is just having that art and developing that art and ear of attack and release, man. That's where it's at in songwriting and in composition. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, those guys are journeymen, you know.
Yeah.
That's a true artist writer, you know, that takes that much time, is passionate about those things, and, you know, and just doing really good work.
Definitely. Now, Martin, I talk a lot about, on my show, about spreading the knowledge and experience of our musical journeys to up-and-coming younger musicians, or even somebody that's just starting out, that's a little bit up there in age, but, you know, they still have that creative passion to do music. And for quite some time now, man, you've been teaching and sharing your musical journey with the young. You know, how has that changed you as a musician, working with the younger musicians and sharing that experience and watch them blossom from your teachings?
One thing for me, most of my kids are, you know, middle school and high school. I mean, I do have some adult students. But for me, the big payoff is watching these young minds, you know, especially in middle school. That's that age where you're kind of trying to find yourself, trying different things. And a lot of times, a lot of kids have low self-esteem, so they're really quirky. I mean, you know, goofy at that age. We all were. But to see them grasp the music when you're teaching them, you know, technique and stuff, and it gives them an edge. You know, even growing up, taking lessons myself, you know, private lessons have always given kids the edge over, you know, other kids when it comes to district band and, you know, state auditions and all those kind of things. But just to watch these kids when they grasp this music and they own it, you know, teaching them, you know, jazz and improvisation, gives them the opportunity to express themselves. The big payoff for me is just when they get it, and then they start walking with, you know, maybe when they first started taking lessons with me, then to watch them evolve into their own, you know, come into their own, so to speak, and they start walking with a little swagger.
Right.
That's awesome. I always tell people I love little boy swagger. You know, these kids walking around with their chests out, you know, and it's great.
Right.
You know, and these kids, they're just awesome, and it's a blessing for me to give away, you know. And I take so much. You know, a lot of times when I'm teaching, or whether it's recording or, you know, instrumental lesson, you know, a lot of the things sometimes I forget in my own playing. You know, you always go back to the basics to find myself repeating stuff. Like, you know, I need to work on that too.
Yeah.
And it kind of keeps you sharp. Keep you sharp, because these kids will ask you questions sometimes and they'll throw you off.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah, you know, out of the mouths of babes. But yeah, it's definitely it's fulfilling, really. It's when you're giving away what you have.
It is, man.
Always.
Oh, totally. You know, even till this day, man. Well, you know, you think about it, man. I mean, for me personally, I consider myself a student of music. You know, I've been composing and playing for about 22 years now. But man, you know, it's just when you learn something new, you really start to think about, it's like, man, how much do I don't know? You know what I'm saying? It's like you pick up one thing and you get to a level where you might feel like you're plateauing and your learning curve. And it's like, well, you know, I've not gone as far as I can go, but, you know, I've kind of hit that plateau peak, man. Then something will click in and just totally changes the way you thought about the other techniques and things you learned about in the past. And, you know, I just totally stepped outside myself and said, man, I'm going to remain a student of music, just because there's so many ways and so many things to learn along your way. And, you know, it's not that you're not seasoned yet. You just pick up and just keep adding things to your arsenal. And it does change your the way you are. It adds swag, gives you confidence, and it also helps your brain retain information. You know, I just felt like when I was younger, man, the more I was learning music, I was able to pick up other things around me as well. So it kind of just killed two birds with one stone, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, with the business of music changing from where it did when you started back in the early 80s, Martin, I mean, now with the internet promotions and download of MP3s, do you feel it's been a negative change in the business, or do you feel it's a positive change for musicians now?
Well, I believe for me, I'll take the high road, you know, and I say it's positive. You're definitely more in control of your own destiny. You know, you reach the people that you want to reach. Tools are there. Of course, a lot more hustling we have to do.
Right.
But I think that's good for everyone. You know, it's also lowered the playing field. And quite frankly, you start looking at mathematics of and accounting of record companies, you know, in the past, and you hear horror stories about those things, you know. Sure. You don't have to deal with that kind of stuff when you're, you know, you're working for yourself. So
yeah.
You're not going to get the big, you know, you're not going to get the, I call it the five heartbeats stuff. And, you know, you're the big red store, you know, my office hours are between 5 and 5.
My office hours are from.
So, you're in control of it. And, you know, it's actually refreshing. You know, it keeps you on your toes. You're forced to learn how to get out there and promote yourself more, and as opposed to, you just deliver your records, you deliver your masters, and you're done. And then the record company takes over everything, and you just have to take their word for it, you know, when you see your statement. So, it's better to go out there, and if you're charging $10-$15 for your CD, you're getting it. You know exactly what you're getting it before before you sell it, after you sell it, and it's yours. So I'm really into it. I like the fact that you can reach so many people, and these people, and they never heard of you. You know, I've sold records in different obscure places around the world, and I know I don't know anybody. And that's always a validation. It's like, you know what? Maybe you're not so bad. Somebody in Japan just bought your CD, or somebody in the south of France just bought a CD and get it on your statement. Oh, this is cool.
If you can touch one, you can touch hundreds,
you can touch thousands. So, you know.
Right.
For everyone that's out there trying to do it, you know, definitely go. Just don't give up. You just got to keep plugging.
You know, I think for older musicians, you know, I'm a young musician, but I've started early, and I can remember, man, in probably around 89, 90, even 88, I was like, man, if we had the opportunity of worldwide distribution and promotions and marketing to really get our music to the fans, we would be in high heaven. We wouldn't have to worry about record labels. Now we're in a position where we have that opportunity, and I think a lot of musicians really have to step outside the musicianship of their craft and really hone in, focus in on the business side of their brand. You know, because a lot of times we really think of ourselves as a brand, but, you know, when you're promoting and putting on a product of something, you're becoming a brand. And, you know, now we just really have to focus, in addition of making great songs and things, is really having a strong campaign behind you also to, you know, brand yourself as an artist.
Yeah. That's the rude awakening for musicians. You know, we ask for it. We've always wanted it. Okay, we can distribute ourselves and do that. Now you have to. You're forced to now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden everyone's eating crow now. And nobody wants to do it. And everybody, I wish I could get a deal.
Right.
No, you have to. You know, and that's going to basically, you know, it's a coming of age thing. You're going to, you're going to man up, knuckle up, and if that's what you want to do, you have to find ways. You have to be creative in doing it. You're gonna, God forbid, you're forced to use your mind.
Right.
So, take advantage of it. That's all you can do. Either that, you sink or swim. You know, that's what it is.
Oh, totally.
And at the same time, it makes you appreciate each fan, each CD that you buy, that you sell, it's just an awesome thing to know when someone appreciates your stuff out there.
It does, man. You know, I think it gives everybody an opportunity to keep everybody on the same playing ground. You know, it's you still got your majors out there. It's like, you know, we can't compete with somebody that has, you know, a $250 million budget to do expensive videos and worldwide tours, but it still gives us an opportunity to get our music out there and let the fans choose for themselves. What they like to choose or not. And we have the ability to release singles instead of whole albums, you know, where, you know, yeah, you could release EPs and singles, but we can do it when we want to. You know, we don't have a schedule. We can just push it out when we want and when we feel it's right. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, Martin, what is on the musical agenda for 2011?
2011, I was talking earlier, I've imposed my own deadlines. I want to put out 4 CDs this year. So this is, I'm working on the next one, which is going to be actually my 4th, which is more of a contemporary thing, but I still have a lot of old influences. One track maybe, kind of feels like a little Bill Withers, and another one is just, I still have my love for, Latin jazz. I have a little bit of that stuff on it. So it's kind of like a contemporary gumbo, so to speak. So that's what's coming up next in June. And after that, I'm going to do a gospel jazz CD.
Wow.
And to close the end of the year up, I'm going to do an album full of hymns.
Well, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you and chopping it up with you, Martin. Man, you definitely got a spot here at the Producers Corner, man. We'd love to have you back and, talk about your new albums, man.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem, man. You have a safe 2011, man. Best of luck to you.
Okay. All right.
All right. And a big shout out and thank you to Martin Bloxon for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another opportunity for me to talk to another seasoned veteran like Martin Bloxon. He's been out in the game for a long time and, you know, has had tons of experience working with other seasoned veterans like Philip Bailey and Vogue and Vesta Williams. And for more information on Martin Bloxon, you need to check out his website at www.martinbloxon.com. www.martinbloxon.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.sputtootight.com, www.sputtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or a PC, an iPhone, an iPod, or an iPad, open up the iTunes store, type in the producer's corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And to close out the show, I'm going to play a track by Martin Bloxon, and the title of the track is called Let the Children Play. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.